We're going to talk about some people we usually don't talk about today on the Fantasy Basketball Today podcast. I'm Chris Towers, here as always with Joe Pulido.
What an intro.
I thought it was, you know, a little different.
Yeah, you just hop right in. People know what to expect now.
In the industry, this is what we call teasing.
Chris, how you doing, man? You seem a little fatigued from our hoops game the other night.
Yeah.
We played for a good 2 hours.
We played for 2 hours on, Tuesday night?
Yeah.
And, I got home completely sore, had to have my wife walk on my back just to, like, get out the kinks. I had to, like, take a nice hot bath just to try to... We're not as young as we used to be, Joe.
No. I was pretty furious with you by the end of it, too, because Chris Towers does this thing where, you know, you're in a pickup hoops game and it gets kind of competitive, uh-huh, and you're jawing a little bit. Uh-huh. Talking about rules and fouls and stuff. Chris is like this person that tries to kill you with like this nihilistic kindness where he's like, uh-huh, Joe, nothing matters. It doesn't matter, Joe.
Well, no, okay.
It's all arbitrary. Okay. Joe, in the grand scheme,
no, let's get
time
into it.
Will forget this game,
we'll,
Joe.
We'll get into it. So, at the end of the game, what was it? It was like...
I had three to win it, and I said game, and they said, no, you got to win by two, and I said,
you guys were down. You guys were down 18 to 20. Someone earlier in the game had said, win by two.
Which must have final, been after because, I said
because
straight
it was,
up.
Because it was the final game of the night, of the series.
Oh, was that the reasoning? It was and, win by two? But and, we play by, let's preface, we play by twos and threes, so I think the win by two
I agree.
Makes less sense.
I agree. That's why I walked off the court. That guy was on my team. I wasn't trying
also,
to defend
him.
Also,
you were just like trying to stay alive probably at that point.
And then you guys are arguing. It's like, that was the last game. Who cares? Game's over. Just walk away.
Most people did accept my declaration of game.
There's also that point where, like, we're playing a relatively free-flowing game, very few foul calls. There's one controversial non-call, and then, like, four of the next five shots.
It kind of just cascades right there.
Yeah, that's what I hate, is when you finally call a foul and it's controversial, it's like, oh, then everybody just calls every ticky-tack. It's just like... We don't have an impartial third party here, guys.
Yeah. I call things under my breath and not really call them. So I'm like, I'm guarding Ryan, who works with us.
Yeah.
And he kind of like does this carry where he like wants to pass and then keeps dribbling. I'm like, carry, carry. So I'll just kind of like, I'll like pretend to call it. That's my thing. I never actually call it. I'd say, you know, if I wanted to, I could call this.
I have a bad tendency of calling it on myself. There was a...
Yeah, you were like, travel.
There was a crack
like,
dribble.
I don't know.
And nobody else, nobody was going to call it. And I just feel bad. Because like... I'm like on the verge of embarrassing myself pretty much at all times when we're playing basketball. So like, I don't want someone else to call it. If I'm gonna call out, one
oh my
of my
god,
screw
you
ups,
see that travel by yeah, Chris Towers?
Exactly.
I'm telling all his Twitter followers.
You know who does not travel?
Ooh,
I don't know.
Segue.
You know who is traveling with the Philadelphia 76ers?
Who?
Nerlens Noel.
Oh.
Could make his debut on Saturday. That's the big news out of Philadelphia. Jahlil Okafor, out Thursday, has been dealing with an illness. Gastroenteritis. Has missed three games as a result
Sounds gross.
Of that.
Hope he gets better.
But Nerlens Noel could make his debut this weekend as he continues to recover from knee surgery. And I got to be honest, I don't know what his role is going to be.
It's going to be weird, I think.
Like, Rashawn Holmes is playing like 15 minutes a game. Maybe Nerlens Noel gets those minutes. But, you know, the way Nerlens has talked about it, he views himself as a center. He views Jahlil Okafor as a center. And he views Joel Embiid as a center. And I would assume he views it that way because the team tends to. They have experimented with playing Embiid and Okafor more together of late now that Embiid's minutes restriction has been heightened, if not lifted. And... You know, maybe they'll do that. Embiid's ability to hit from three-point range has kind
of... Like, the thing is, of the three, somehow on offense, Embiid is the most power forward-like for today's NBA. Just because he can face up and he can space a little. Whereas, you know, Okafor's not bigger than him by any means, but he plays bigger, I guess, in a limited way. So I think Noel is more talking about the politics of the team and the franchise and less so the
he's trying to force
mechanics
his way
on
out,
the court.
I think.
Because if he really wanted to make it work, he could look at a guy who's immensely talented on offense like Embiid and say, okay, he's perfect to be out of the way for when I'm crashing boards and doing my thing in the middle. Sounds like he just doesn't like the situation from a personal standpoint. Yeah, no.
But I would guess Noel will be very limited at the start, at least, probably not playing too many minutes.
And I don't think them giving him a ton of minutes is going to heighten his trade value. Like, people know what he is, what he could be. You know, I think keeping him healthy and sort of, you know, mystery box a little bit is going to be better for his value than them trying to get a bunch of run out of him.
But he's probably not going to be startable for sure at first. I would guess for the first couple of weeks while they work him back in. I think you're just kind of stashing him in hopes of a trade, really.
And this team is a lot different from the last time you played Nerlens Noel. Like, we have Ersan Ilyasova taking 14 threes out of nowhere. You know, like, a random guy will sort of try and step up every game, it seems. So it's not like he's the only one on the team. Mm-hmm. You know, not that they're great, but...
Yeah. Some of the other big news in the NBA as of Thursday afternoon, Gordon Hayward aggravated that finger injury from the preseason. X-rays came back negative. He is out Thursday, though, against the Warriors, I believe. They will also be without George Hill, Rodney Hood, and Derek Favors in that game. George Hill dealing with turf toe. Rodney Hood has a hamstring injury. Derek Favors still has that knee. And I guess we should discuss this because it definitely affects fantasy players, too. But there has been a lot of talk within the Jazz-centric media circle about the team's general unwillingness to provide timetables for any of their injured players. They are, I don't know if they're the most, but they're among the most
hush-hush
teams when it comes to injuries. They give as few details as possible. They don't give you the, you know, we're going to reevaluate in
4 weeks.
They're not going to give you the he's out 2-4 weeks.
I mean, Derek Favors has been the great example of that, because
that's just been kind of day to day.
That's like one of the pillars of their franchise, and it's kind of just like, well, he might play.
And I get the thought process behind it. I get the motivation behind the Utah Jazz doing that, but it's frustrating.
Yeah, it's frustrating for the people who cover them,
for the fantasy, fans, for the fantasy players.
But you know, in the end, there's probably worse problems to have with your franchise.
Yeah, it's just it makes things tough because now, you know, with Gordon Hayward dealing with this finger injury, it doesn't sound serious. It's just a finger injury. George Hill, just a toe injury. But the way it's been going, George Hill had the foot injury early on in the season that cost him, what, 7 games? And it's just, it's these situations where you don't know what their status is going to be. And so if it comes to the start of week 8, maybe, and, you know, George Hill, Gordon Hayward are still both out, it makes it really hard to know if you're going to be able to start them.
Yeah, and that is weird, you know, on a team-by-team basis, because if they were on another team, maybe you'd know, okay, they're not going to play this week, or, oh, he's targeting Wednesday for a return, that kind of thing. It's just not a lot to bank on, I guess.
Yeah. Don't have a timetable for Tyreke Evans' return. He has been ruled out for Thursday. Jrue Holiday is also questionable for Thursday. He's dealing with turf toe, which is never a good injury. It depends on the severity, but that's an injury that famously can linger for weeks and even months. Tyreke Evans probably back in the next couple of games. We'll see. The Rockets will hold on to Donatas Motiejunas's offer sheet that he signed with the Nets. They are not going to. There was some talk about them maybe possibly letting him out of it, going back into restricted free agency. The one thing we do know, he's not going to be a Brooklyn Net, which is frustrating because that would have been a very good situation for him. He could have either, you know, played with Brook Lopez, served as the backup power forward. I think he could have gotten 25 minutes a game, and we've seen him be a very effective player in that role. So he's just kind of in limbo. If you added him as a speculative add, I know a couple people did. I think he's back above 15% ownership now. Probably go ahead and drop him.
Yeah, I would not, you know, I would not pass on somebody else to hang on to him.
Isaiah Thomas has a groin injury. He's doubtful for Friday versus Toronto. Derrick Rose has a back injury. He missed Wednesday's game against the Cavaliers. Never a good sign when Derrick Rose is hurt, although I guess given his history, the fact that it's not a leg injury is positive.
He started feeling the back spasms. He kind of started playing through it, and then they were whooping up on the Heat, so they didn't really need him, and then it was a quick back-to-back. Yeah. So I think it was kind of the expected Derrick Rose rest game.
That was actually the first game that he's missed all season,
right,
which is a big win for the Bulls so far, even if, you know, he's been...
Knicks. Big win for the Bulls, too.
Even if he's been kind of hit or miss overall. All right, we're going to, on today's show, we're going to do the drop-a-meter talk about some players who you might be considering dropping. I know a handful of you on Twitter gave me plenty of the same names that we're going to talk about, so we'll get to that. We will talk about some of the surprise leaderboard leaders, I guess, around the NBA.
Leaders of the leaderboard.
And try to figure out who is more sustainable. We'll compare a couple players who are leading different categories. And Joe's got a list of players we are not talking enough about. So we'll get to that shortly. But first, the drop-o-meter. We'll calibrate it 1 to 5. 1 is you're not dropping. 5 is you are dropping. And then varying shades of gray.
So like 5 is like drop him today.
Yeah, 5 is I'm dropping him and I'll keep an open roster spot.
Just one is just so he's not weighing down my team.
Yeah.
Okay.
So number one, first player, Pau Gasol. This was the third year in a row that I called Pau Gasol a bust. And I think I finally nailed it. I think I finally got Pau Gasol. It's not even so much that he's not playing well. He's shooting 49% from the field. He's, you know, dishing out his typical allotment of assists. He's doing Pau Gasol-y things. He's just only playing 26 minutes per game. His usage rate has fallen down to 21% from 24%. And nothing about this should be surprising. He's averaging 11.4 points, 7.4 rebounds, 2.5 assists. Is Pau Gasol droppable?
I would say it's a 2 just okay. Because he's Pau Gasol, but he's certainly approaching that because he's been spursed. His production has been, you know, given the Popovich, let's put him in the wine cellar type
exactly.
of treatment. And he was so good last year that I think maybe you were a little blinded by the fact that mm-hmm. he was blocking 2 shots a game at age 37 or however old he is. So, you know, that's like you know, people like you saw it coming a little bit. Yep. Hopefully you didn't draft him too early, but
he is 99% owned. That feels a little high.
Yeah, I feel like in a 10-team league, yeah. you know, you could probably find guys with more upside putting up similar, you know, 10 and 8 type numbers.
It helps that he's a center, because that's still solid number 2 center production. It's very like Robin Lopez-y.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, because he's never going to be inefficient necessarily. Yeah. He's shooting 60% from the free throw line, though?
That's a little surprising.
Right?
But yeah. He probably doesn't
shoot many free throws.
Yeah, that's one of those things where he's only taken 46 of them through 21 games. So that's one that, you know, I would probably expect it to turn around. This is a guy who's been an 80% shooter for most of his career. You know, really starting in 2007, he's been right around 80%. So,
but it is discouraging that they're not asking him to do a little bit more, like, say, in the assist column, or maybe to shoot some threes to spread yeah. things out. Like, per 36, he's only 3.4 assists per game, which is, you know, it's not bad for
his
position.
Probably
his
lowest in a handful of years.
Yeah, he's 4.6 last year, mm-hmm. and he's been up to 4.4 in the past. So, you know, just not getting a ton of touches, they don't really rely on him at all. Yep. He's more of a role player for them.
All right, what about Robert Covington of the Philadelphia 76ers? It's actually, you know, it's weird. His shots per game are down, his usage rate is down, but the minutes are still there, 27.5. He's still getting 5 rebounds per game, 1.9 steals, 1.9 three-pointers, but only 8.5 points, 30.9% from the field. That's really bad.
Yeah, and he's dealing with an injury. I would say unless, you know, you have nobody on your team that does steals well.
Yeah.
I'd say he's, you know, a 4 on the drop-o-meter just because the Sixers, I've had him on a team, and I struggle week to week whether to shove him and Sarge out there in my yeah. last spot, and it's like you can never decide.
Sarge
you know.
Has been great lately. I think Sarge he's scored 19-plus points in 3 straight games.
He's scoring and rebounding at a nice little clip, but mm-hmm. it's like kind of up and down, and he doesn't do anything else, whereas Covington's steals kind of make him
yeah.
sort of a special player in fantasy, but, you know, just the inefficiency, the inconsistency with that team in general kind of makes him sort of a flyer, I would say.
The weird thing with Saric, only he has no assists in his
last
2
games. That is so
bizarre. And when I watch him, like, he does
well, that,
have a knack.
That
for
was
playing.
His M.O.
Yeah.
That was like he was, you know, like a Lamar Odom type
yeah.
of,
there,
you know.
There was one I was watching
forward.
The other day where he, whatever their most recent game, I think, on or Monday against Denver, he had a really nice play where he actually ran the pick and roll, got to the rim, fed a shooter, and then the guy missed a shot. And it's that's something that could improve, but it's not there yet.
If anything, it is encouraging that he's finding a way to be effective on a team that doesn't highlight his strengths, because, you know, he'd be best as a small ball four who gets to handle a lot, and they already, you know, they have an even more prestigious guy waiting in the wings who does that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of impressive that he's found a way to be useful. But back to Covington, I just, you know, the steals are pretty much the only thing keeping him on your team.
So a three?
I'd say a three is fair.
Tim Frazier, averaging 10.5 points, 7.3 assists per game for the season, still getting really good minutes over the last five, 29.8 minutes, but his production has really taken a hit. 29.7% from the field, that's led to 6 points per game, and only 5.2 assists per game, and that's really the thing that's worrisome, because he was at like 8 or 9 in the previous five games. Tyreek Evans coming back soon.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you're in a daily league, you probably don't want to drop him because he's playing Thursday. Jrue Holiday, if he doesn't play, Tim Frazier is going to have a big opportunity. But overall, are we pretty much ready to cut Tim Frazier?
I think there's similar guys like him, but also the situation kind of shows you that there might still be opportunity for him down the road. So, like, you know, Pelicans keep being bad. They keep having to deal with injuries. He's kind of a guy they can count on to do lots of different things. So, like, I would say I'd be more on, like, a two for him just because I'm waiting for him to become useful again, you know.
I was actually thinking, like, a four.
Yeah. I mean, that's fine. I've had him on my team for a while. So, kind of just feel like at this point maybe I'll hang on to him and see if the other guys stay healthy.
That's definitely the thing. If Jrue Holiday and Tyreek Evans can't stay healthy, which has been the case for pretty much the last 3 years, really, he's got a big opportunity. But, you know, I might rather own Matthew Dellavedova than Tim Frazier. And Tim Frazier's owned in 84%. Dellavedova's 40%. So that's not a move that I'd be afraid of making at this point. What about Rajon Rondo? 8.3 points, 6.6 assists, 6.9 assists, 6.6 rebounds.
How's he shooting?
not well. Recently suspended for conduct detrimental to the team. I believe he has 4 assists in
Josh Lloyd of
his last 2 games.
Australian fantasy basketball says his conduct detrimental to the team was playing. So
I mean, this is a guy whose
shout out to Josh.
This is a guy whose teammates voted not to give him a share of their playoff revenue when he was in Dallas when he got suspended for tanking.
Yeah.
Like that's the only way to describe what he did in Dallas, that when he got that backcourt violation because he just didn't bring the ball up the floor because he was yelling at his coach. Like, but he's got 4 assists over his last 2 games with 8 turnovers. And this is a guy that, like, if he's not getting 9 assists per game.
And, like, 2 steals, at least.
Yeah, what is his value? Like, the rebounds are nice, I guess, but, like, I don't know, an extra 12 rebounds per game over a point guard if he doesn't do anything else. Like, I don't think there's much value here.
No.
I think, given the situation he's in, he's shooting 39% from the field.
It's similar to Pau Gasol. I mean, Pau's not playing as bad as Rondo, but they're names. So it's just going to be like, if you drop him, somebody's probably going to scoop him up just because of who they are.
Yeah.
So just kind of have to take the temperature of your league. Because it's the same with me and Tim Frazier. Like, I know... Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to scoop up Tim Frazier in the leagues that I play in because Dellavedova is probably already owned in that league. So just take a lay of the land. I would say he's a 3.
Yeah, I think so.
Which is high for a guy of his caliber.
Yeah, I wrote about him in my stock watch for week 7 on CBSSports.com. Go check that out. Along with Marc Gasol, Bradley Beal playing, I think the best they've ever played. I wrote about that. And Serge Ibaka has actually bounced back really nicely. So. Go read about that. He's got 3-plus blocks in 7 of his last 10 games.
Serge
Ibaka, after a slow start, playing as well as he has, I would say, in the last 3 years. Markieff Morris, this one's probably pretty obvious. 12.9 points, 5.8 rebounds, 1.6 assists, 1.3 steals. I think he's pretty droppable right now.
Yeah?
I think he's a 4.
I don't know. I'm lower than that. I would say more of a 2, just because... Just that team is bad. Like, they just need guys to step up. I think his sort of dropping off has sort of coincided with Bradley Beal's uprising a bit because Markieff is Morris is a guy that like will shoot. He'll take those mid range shots that Bradley Beal wants to take and mm-hmm. things like that. But I think he's still playing a lot of minutes, isn't he? Like,
oh yeah, no, he's getting consistent minutes. He's just not
doesn't do anything special
any
really.
Good.
Whoa.
For instance, he is 92% owned in CBSSports.com leagues. John Henson is 65%. I know we don't trust Jason Kidd, but I would rather drop Markieff Morris, add John Henson, and if Jason Kidd decides that he wants to give John Henson a did-not-play coach's decision for a couple games in a row and kind of screw you over, I'm fine with streaming. I'd rather own someone like Troy Daniels, who's been playing really well for Memphis. I might rather stream Bohan Bogdanovic than Markieff Morris at this point.
I think it's just that, you know, he's not doing any of them in, you know, starting caliber abundance, but mm-hmm. he's good at steals.
Yeah, he can do
things. He can hit a three. He's not a bad free throw shooter. Like, I just feel like he's a good free throw shooter.
Him be a top 50 player. He's kind of like Terrence Jones in that way.
He's a guy you put in there and you don't have to worry about him hurting you, but his upside is like very limited at this point.
Yeah, I mean, he hurt you a lot last year.
I guess that's true. And he's shooting 40% from the field, yeah. which isn't great.
I think I'm maybe a three with him. But yeah, Monte Ellis, I think I'm at a four and a
he's
quarter.
Up there.
Averaging 10.1 points, 3.5 rebounds, 3.7 assists. And the numbers are even worse over the last 5 to 10 games. I think he's under 3 assists per game over the last 5. Jeff Teague, actually in the top 10 in assists per game this season. And it's kind of a situation where, you know, Pacers fans have long been we're long frustrated by George Hill's lack of aggressiveness, I guess. And I think it's somewhat fair as a criticism, but I also think it kind of...
I think they just looked at the rest of the point guards in the league and expected him to be one
it's
of
It's not
those.
George Hill's game.
Right, no.
Like, he has been aggressive this season,
he's
but
he's... a throwback
he's,
player.
Yeah, and so, you know, putting Monte Ellis next to him was an especially bad fit, but Jeff Teague is someone who is going to attack. He is aggressive, and that's not necessarily better or worse than George Hill. He's just a different type of player.
Well, he's probably taking a lot of Monte's assist opportunities,
yeah.
which if you drafted Monte, you know, you were hoping he was going to be in the 6 assist range because that's what was going to carry his value because he hasn't scored
yeah.
at a high rate in a
he
long time.
Hit threes.
He's okay at steals, but he kind of needs to be involved in a lot of the action, I think, to be going for those steals.
He's a pretty fringy player
yeah.
right now. Like, I don't know. Like, he's definitely better than Tony Allen. But I'm not sure I wouldn't rather just stream Tony Allen right now with the way Memphis is playing because he's getting a lot of playing opportunities.
There's nothing on that team for Monte to do. He's a quick, skilled, specialist kind of player
mm-hmm.
who can pass but not really getting the chance to. 3.7, not terrible, but I think he was up to like 6 last year or
well,
something
and
like that.
He's got 9 assists in the last 5 games. He's down to 2.7 over the last 10.
Yeah, that's bad.
It's not there. I think he's pretty droppable, even in a 12-team league.
Would you rather have him or Tim Frazier?
Tim Frazier. Even with Tyreke Evans coming back.
Because they're going to get similar lines, except Frazier's got the more assist opportunities.
Yeah. And I think he's a better
and
shooter.
And his team is worse, so they're going to need him more.
And another guy who is very, very disappointing. Although, in fairness, Aaron Gordon's never been what we want him to be. And so when we say he's disappointing, it's a little bit on us too, right?
Yeah.
Like, Aaron Gordon's been
kind
of the same guy.
He's not achieving the hype that fantasy
yeah.
drafts were garnering him.
And even, you know, after the second half last season when he got thrust into the starting role, even then he wasn't quite what we either thought he would be or what kind of the hype indicated he would be after the All-Star break last year. He averaged 12 points, 7.3 rebounds, 2 assists. He had 45 steals and blocks combined in 27 games, so right around 2. Like, he was pretty good, but he wasn't a star. And he's definitely not a star right now. 8.6 points, 4 rebounds, 1.2 assists, only 1 combined block and steal per game over the last 10 for Orlando. Serge Ibaka playing much better. I think part of that is probably that Aaron Gordon's playing less, and Ibaka has more room.
Yeah, I'd say he's a four.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing that's saving him from being a five is that the Magic, you know, seem to like him. They're not giving him a ton of minutes and everything, but he's, you know, a young, raw, exciting player who dunks a lot, and the fans probably love him. So, you know, something – that's the thing with this whole list. I was going to say, you know, these are all kind of – except for maybe Pau Gasol.
Yeah.
Rajon Rondo to an extent. But other guys could be involved in trades. Their teams could be involved in trades. So, like, you know,
Gordon
somehow
definitely is a there is definitely. I don't think he's a candidate for a
trade. No, but the Magic
are an obvious
right.
one.
If the Magic turn towards the young side of things, then you know, then he's asked to pass the ball. Then he's asked to guard down low and get some blocks. Yeah. Like right now, he's just kind of like a perimeter player, like stay out of the way on offense.
Yeah, totally miscast as a perimeter guy. I think just isn't that yet.
I feel like if he weighed, you know, 20 more pounds, people would be like, oh, it's Blake Griffin. He's a power forward. Let's put him in the post. Let's see what he can do. But he's kind of like this face-up dribble dude.
Blake Griffin, yeah.
Right.
Let's talk about some more injuries, news, and notes.
More good news.
Well, there's some good news in here.
Oh, okay.
Some of it. Not all of it. Dwayne Casey admitted that the Raptors are basically stuck playing matchups with Jonas Valanciunas. I think he sat the entire fourth quarter in their most recent game. He's just...
It's kind of a shame.
Yeah, he's someone that I've always liked, apparently a lot more than the Raptors coaching staff does, and it's tough because he's such a skilled offensive player. He's not a great defender, but I don't think he's terrible. But, you know, right now, minutes are fluctuating. Not really a starting caliber fantasy player, which is disappointing because he started off the season really well.
Well, the thing is, he's a great scorer. Like, he can score a ton, but... He's on a team with two even greater scorers, and if they're not letting him do his thing, you know, not that they're holding it against him or anything, but just they're just better. That's what they do.
I was really hoping DeMar DeRozan would leave because I thought Jonas Valanciunas could have a real breakout season. He's averaging 6 points per game over his last five.
It's just crazy. Like, there's a lot of guys on that team that can score. Like, if that's – and it's not necessarily in, like, this team let's score 120 kind of way. It's like Terrence Ross can – can get 18 points easily. Patrick Patterson can hit five threes in a game easily. And Valanciunas kind of needs everyone to like, okay, guys, it's my turn. Mm-hmm. Like, let me do my thing. It's not happening.
Here's some good news. We'll talk about some good news right in a row. Klay Thompson dropped 60 points in 29 minutes. You probably heard about it. There were some ridiculous stats. I think he only had the ball for 88 seconds in his 60-point game.
He didn't even touch the ball, I heard.
Advanced stats.
Yeah, he didn't touch, like, they threw it to him, and his aura was swishing.
So, Klay Thompson, I believe, is actually averaging more points per game than he did last season. He is at 22.6. That's amazing. I did not think they would be able to get him as many or more touches as he had last season. I don't know. They're doing it. I mean, it's basically the big four are pretty much getting there. Steph's scoring is down. Kevin Durant's scoring is down a little bit. But, like, Steph's still getting 26 points, 4 rebounds, 6 assists, 1.8 steals. Draymond's still getting 11 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists, 2 steals, 1.5 blocks. Kevin Durant is just playing absolutely
ridiculous. His defense has been eye-opening. I mean, you saw it in the playoffs, but it's like now you really see when, like, they are so damn good at defense. Mm-hmm. I mean, offense, whatever. They made the Clippers look like a high school team last night on defense.
And they're kind of like the big three Heat in that they don't have a traditional rim protector, but they can protect the rim from the wings almost because they've got guys like Draymond Green and Kevin Durant.
It's funny you say that because I was like, I don't want to be a Heat homer, you know, but Kerr is doing the Spo thing where he's letting these four guys kind of work it out and experimenting. He's going to experiment with the lineup all year. So he's going to he shoved JaVale McGee out there in meaningful minutes. Like he could have put the game away. They'd have been up by 50, but he wanted to see which guys can play, and that opens the door for all these guys to get theirs because they're going to have to play point guard and limited little roles. But back to Klay, I think he's kind of become the Harrison Barnes and he's just way better than Harrison Barnes. So now he's the guy that nobody's really paying attention to. And they're not really running that offense where Bogut plows people over, and they're kind of running a more like pace and space like you saw with the Heat where, you know, let's drive and dish, let's do pick and roll, and somebody's going to be open because we're so good at passing, and Clay is usually that guy.
Kevin Durant is shooting 55% from the field, 41% from three. Not actually taking very many threes, which is still surprising, only 4.8 per game, but yeah, he's having one of his best all-around seasons. He's averaging 3.2 combined blocks and steals per game.
It's pretty incredible.
That's ridiculous. Russell Westbrook also doing pretty
good.
Yeah,
he's good. He's good.
Six straight double-doubles, going for seven
triple
on
doubles,
Thursday night.
Believe.
Or triple-doubles, yeah.
Yeah.
Going for seven on Thursday night. That would match Michael Jordan's longest career stretch. You might have heard of him. Troy Daniels, averaging 21.6 points per game over the last five. I think he's still really low-owned, like 20, 30%. Worth going out and getting. Patrick Beverley had 10 points, 7 rebounds, 12 assists, and 3 steals.
I told y'all.
On Wednesday night.
Career assist year for
averaging
Pat Beverley.
Averaging a career-high 4.6 assists, yeah. It's,
I think he's going to keep going up, too, just because he's an energy guy.
Only right around 7, 8 points per game overall, but this is also all coming back from knee surgery. And, like, rushing back from knee surgery. He was only out for like 4 or 5 weeks.
He's an animal, and you're going to look at the game log sometimes, he's going to have 5 points and four assists. But other nights, when they play bad teams, you know, and they want to let him, you know, run around and be a beast a little bit, I think it's going to even out to where he's a pretty serviceable, you know, fourth guard.
In Roto, for sure. I think he's must-own in Roto. Head-to-head, he doesn't have quite the volume that you need. But, you know, I think I might drop Monte Ellis for him.
I definitely would in Roto. I like that.
Caris LeVert was LeVert.
You said LeVert last time.
It was scoreless in 9 minutes in his debut, but he did have 3 steals and 4 rebounds for the Nets. He's someone we're stashing in deeper leagues. Mo Harkless is questionable on Thursday with an ankle injury. Al Farouk Aminu is back. Doug McDermott has been dealing with a concussion. He could play Thursday. Jan Mahimni getting closer to returning. It's going to be interesting to see what that means for Washington, who is just a mess right now. They lost to the Magic with John Wall scoring 52 points.
What's John Wall got to do, guys? To get a W.
It's bad. And Jared Bayless remains out with a wrist injury. He is kind of without a timetable. Seems like he might have rushed back from that injury. And Sergio Rodriguez remains fantasy relevant as long as Jared Bayless remains out.
So. Yeah, when they were like, we don't know if he'll need another surgery or not, that was kind of a bad sign that when he plays, it's going to hurt.
Yeah. So, Sergio Rodriguez, still worth owning, for sure. Joe, who aren't we talking about?
Well, I'm going to do this sort of name that player style. So we'll see. You know, you jump in if you think you can if you can name that player. Okay, first player we haven't really talked about at all. Among small forwards, he's making more than 5 field goals per game, and he trails only Kevin Durant in field goal percentage at 54%. So, you know, of the small forwards taking shots, he's the second most efficient. He's tied for 5th in steals per game among small forwards with 1.9. He's 4th in rebounds among small forwards.
I definitely know this. Hold on.
At 7.9 per game. He's a player that we haven't talked about until today in the future because you put him down lower in the rundown for another segment.
I have no idea.
He shares the same name with the bus driver from The Simpsons. First name. Ooh, man, Chris.
I have no idea.
It's Otto Porter.
Otto Porter!
That's how under the radar he is.
He's going to get a max contract this offseason.
He is killing it.
Porter is playing absolutely ridiculous basketball right
Wizards
now.
Wizards are bad, and it's not his fault because he's been insanely efficient. He's shooting 54% from the field.
They've got 2 former number 3 overall picks who are finally living up to expectations in Bradley Beal and Otto Porter, and the team has never been worse because the bench stinks.
Yeah.
You know, Otto Porter, 53.9% from the field, 41.7% from three. There's regression coming.
We'll talk about him a little later, so we don't have to linger. But, yeah just the, you know, fifth in steals among small forwards, 8 rebounds a game, you know, shooting field goals like Kevin Durant, like pretty impressive stuff. Yep. Go Otto. Next guy. He hasn't played that many games, so preface with that. But he's averaging career-high 2.6 blocks per game.
Okay.
Third in the league. More than Hassan Whiteside per game.
Okay.
He's averaging a career-high 1.3 three-pointers made per game. He's
okay.
First in blocks per game and free throw percentage among centers. And
I'm usually pretty good at this game.
Yeah. I mean, he's only played 12 games, and the team hasn't been flourishing, but he absolutely has. He leads.
Oh, Marc Gasol.
Close, but no. The threes and everything is kind of there, but the 2.6 blocks is Al Horford.
Oh,
he's averaging 2.6 blocks per game. He's getting 5 assists per game. He's playing out of his mind for fantasy. I mean, I think it's kind of being swept under the rug because the Celtics aren't like super happy with the way that they're playing right now, but he is absolutely living up to...
He is playing really well.
And that was a guy that you were calling, you know, second rounder, something like that. So he's definitely giving you 24th ranked ADP. So good to see him getting it done. But 2.6 blocks is like... That's going to come down, I think, because he's never averaged... I don't even know if he's averaged more than 2.
1.5 is his career high.
So that's pretty crazy. Okay, last guy. He's tied for 5th in three-pointers made per game at 3.0, which is also a career high. He's 6th in the NBA in assists, 7.4 per game. Okay. Matches his career high. He's 2nd in minutes per game in the NBA.
Lillard.
No.
Hmm.
But he's having a Lillard-type year that I don't... I didn't really accept. No. It's Kyle Lowry.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Kyle Lowry. Nobody's talking about him.
No, and he's hitting 3 threes a game, and he's up there in assists. I mean, he's playing a ton of minutes.
He got off to a bad start.
Yeah, but lately, I think, especially from the three-point line,
yeah,
he's just been lighting it up. My clue is going to be his last name is the same as Will Smith's in Bad Boys.
I don't think that would have helped me. I love the movie.
I didn't have any clues for Lowry. But yeah, those three guys, I feel like, are having phenomenal statistical seasons. You know, career bests in basically every category for all of them. Kyle Lowry's shooting a bit career best field goal percentage as well.
Yeah, he's providing early second round return value, and you know, he's probably drafted around there, but nobody was ever like excited to draft Kyle Lowry.
And I am guilty of that too. He's ranked 18th in ADP on Fantasy Pros, and that was a guy who I was like, I mean, I guess I'll take him. But
you were more excited about John Wall or Paul George,
right? Because they're known to be elite at things, and Kyle Lowry was like pretty good at everything. Yeah. But right now he's elite in threes. He's close to elite in assists. He's getting a ton of minutes.
Otto Porter is currently 12th in Roto value right now.
We had a trade question that will
and Horford's 9th. So
let's just offer up the trade question. They wanted to know if we would trade Otto Porter for. If we would trade Melo for Otto Porter. And I was like, no, you can't trade Melo. And then I like thought about it and looked at it, and I was like, he says he doesn't need the scoring, is the thing.
Yeah.
And then Melo is eight points per game better than him, but that's pretty much it. Like, he's hitting half a three more, I think.
If you don't need the scoring, and I think Otto Porter's due for some regression. There are some things in his numbers that are a little over the top, but if you don't need the scoring, it's not crazy. I think I would do that.
Yeah, and it's something that, you know, if you're going to offer trades, those are the kinds of ones you want to offer because people will see the name Melo. Yeah. They'll want to, you know.
And your team's better.
Yeah. And the steals. 2 steals a game. Can't give that up.
And that's actually, you know, when you look at what's unsustainable for him, it's not the steals because he was at 1.4 last year per game.
And he's a gangly guy, so
and he's playing four more minutes. He never turns the ball over. He's a good free throw shooter. He's a good 3-point shooter, even if he's not quite this good. Otto Porter's doing a lot of really good things right now, and there's a lot to like about him for fantasy. All right, and we're gonna close off the show. Thank you, Joe.
No problem. Get
together.
Let's talk about those guys we don't talk about, you know?
Yeah, there we go. Let's talk about sustainability. We're going to compare.
Is your voice sustainable for the stretch run of this podcast?
We're going to compare some of the NBA leaders and see which is more sustainable moving forward. First one off. Anthony Davis, averaging 31.6 points per game. Did you realize he's leading the NBA in points per game?
That's pretty crazy, considering...
Considering the historic kind of seasons that we're watching, right. He's, you know, benefiting a little bit from Kevin Durant being on the Warriors and all that.
And his team being terrible.
He's averaging 31.6 points per game. He's shooting 50.3% from the field. He's not really taking that many three-pointers, 2.3 per game. He showed that range last season, but he's only at 27.1% this season. He's just getting to the free throw line more than ever. He's hitting 82.3% of them. 1.8 steals, 2.8 blocks per game.
Let's get him and John Wall on the same team. They're both doing the same things right now. They're very frustrated. They're like,
yeah,
you know, I'm gonna show you guys I can do absolutely anything on this basketball court. So
what's more sustainable? Anthony Davis is league-leading 31.6 points per game, or James Harden's 11.4 assists per game, also leading the league?
I got to say Harden. I mean,
okay.
I have more faith in the D'Antoni offense producing assist opportunities than I do in, like, practically anything else in basketball right now.
I agree. It is worth noting, over the last 10 games, he's down, air quotes, to 9.9 assists per game.
Well, Beverly's back.
Yeah.
They're letting Gordon handle a lot. Like, I think the team is starting to even out, but...
Only one game with double-digit assists in December, four games.
But do you think Anthony Davis can keep scoring 30 points a game?
James Harden's assists are more sustainable, because Anthony Davis is going to have to deal with
Yeah.
Jrue Holiday being healthy and Tyreke Evans at some point. So that's going to go down.
One stat is from the product of a lack of a system, and the other stat is the product of a system. Yeah. So I'll go with the system.
What is more sustainable? Giannis Antetokounmpo ranking third and fifth in steals and blocks, respectively.
Go Giannis.
Or Westbrook ranking second and ninth in assists and rebounds?
It kind of sounds like I'm always sort of poo-pooing Giannis hype, but I think I got to go with Westbrook just because I think steals and blocks are much harder to consistently achieve. I think they're more situation-dependent, mm-hmm. whereas assists and rebounds are going to happen in abundance every game,
mm-hmm.
and Westbrook is the most abundant player in the game right now.
I mean, yeah, Giannis is currently getting steals at almost twice the rate he did last season. He had a 1.7% steal rate last year. It's up to 3.1 this year. He had a 3.4% block rate last year. That's up to 5.8. I will point out, he is guarding power forwards more this season. So he's spending more time on defense close to the rim, which is definitely going to help. He's 7 feet tall with, 14-foot long arms.
Yeah, and so. I mean, he's one of the quickest guys, in a front court ever. So you get him down there in space and people are trying to force passes, trying to force up tough shots.
Yeah.
He's going to get to a lot of them. But Westbrook is Westbrook, and he's chasing rebounds, like a rabid Wolverine right now.
Mm-hmm.
So those are going to be there. The assists, I think, could be tougher just because he's going to keep wanting to score a lot. He's going to, his team isn't that great, but I think he can do it. I think assists and rebounds for Westbrook are just going to come a lot easier than blocks and steals for Giannis.
Another thing I did want to point out, Marc Gasol currently averaging has a 24.5% assist rate. That would be the highest in NBA history for a player 6'11 and taller, except for the fact that Giannis is at 31% and he's 6'11.
Kind of a cheap move, Giannis, being that tall.
Sorry, Mark. Like I said earlier, though, and just throwing this out there, Marc Gasol, 19.2 points, 4.2 assists.
Is he playing in all the games? Are they resting him at all?
Like, he's played 22 games. I don't think maybe he's missed one game.
Congrats if you drafted him, because that was sort of the worry.
The most amazing thing, 1.5 three-pointers per game. He's hit 33. He's 33 for 78.
He's hitting like step-back threes and stuff, too. 12
three-pointers before this in his career. He's hitting 42.3%. He would be the fifth player ever to average 19 points, 4 assists, and 1.5 blocks per game. And he would be the first to do it while averaging 1 3-pointer per game.
I'm sure Fizdale sees his skill and, recognizes a bit of Chris Bosh in him.
Yeah.
He's a better passer, obviously, but just the ability to dribble and shoot from out there.
He's so good. What's more sustainable, Jimmy Butler averaging 26 points per game or Isaiah Thomas averaging 26 points per game? They're both averaging exactly 26.0.
I would say Thomas.
Okay.
Just because he's the only one on his team that can score.
Okay.
Right? Is that fair to say?
He's the only guy who attacks, for sure. I mean, you've got, Bradley and Al Horford can both
score. I mean, they will put the ball in the hoop.
Yeah,
I don't
they'll
doubt
get
that,
theirs, but they don't go out and get theirs.
But if Brad Stevens is like, where's my scores?
Yeah.
I think Isaiah Thomas is the only one that raises his hand.
Yeah.
Whereas Jimmy Butler, you know, good scorer, good player, but he plays with Dwayne Wade. Taj Gibson loves to shoot. Mirotić loves to shoot. You know, I think he could settle into a more well-rounded profile, whereas Isaiah Thomas, this is what he does. He gets buckets.
What's more sustainable? Robin Lopez averaging 1.9 blocks per game, a career high, or Clint Capella averaging the same 1.9, also a career high? His career is a little shorter, though.
I think you got to go Capella.
Yeah?
I mean, I've gone Rockets across the board here, but...
I mean, anytime you're talking about, like, accruing numbers,
yeah,
it's not a bad idea to bet on the person who plays in Mike D'Antoni's offense.
And he's playing great. They're not giving him a ton of minutes, which might be good for him, honestly, just because he's not forced to go to the free throw line a ton. He's, you know, stays fresh and athletic because that's the way he needs to play. Whereas Robin Lopez has been good before, but I feel like he's more of a 1.5 block kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
And Capella's just an athletic freak. He's like a skinny DeAndre Jordan who's going to go after a lot more balls above the rim.
You know what's really interesting about the Rockets, though? They're only averaging 97.4 possessions per game, which is 11th. They're actually slightly down from last year's pace, which I think is very surprising. You couldn't go that much faster. They were 7th in pace last year, but I thought they would. I thought they would lead the league in pace.
Because I think it's just a much more organized pace. So, like, they know when they should take their time, and when they do, it's just got a nice...
Yeah.
It unfolds the right way. Whereas some possessions, you know, they get it, and they're going to go right down the hatch and try and get a dunk. Like, I just think it's a more streamlined version of playing fast.
All right, and what's more sustainable? The last one. We talked about Otto Porter's breakout season already. He's shooting 41.7% from the field, 40 points higher than his career...
From three.
Best from three, excuse me. Or C.J. McCollum, shooting 44.4%, 30% better than last season.
This is definitely the toughest one because C.J.'s a shooter.
Yeah.
But... You know, the difference between 40% and 45% from the three is pretty significant.
Yeah.
Real quick, shout out to Nick E. Kroll on Twitter for sending me that question about Melo. And, you know, I think we've decided that, yeah, we probably would
take
Porter's more well-rounded. But from the three-point line, I don't know. This one's tough. What do you think? I'm going to defer to you on this one.
It's really interesting. Last year on long twos, 16 feet out to the three-point line, he was a 47.2% shooter.
Who's that?
Otto Porter. He was 37% on threes. This year, he's 44% on long twos and 42% on threes. You put them both together, and you're probably looking at a guy who shoots right around 42 to 43% from 16 feet and out. And it's just kind of random whether it's going to be, you know, more from 3-point. So I kind of think his true talent level is probably pretty close to a 40% three-point shooter at this point, especially, you know, getting to play with John Wall.
Yeah.
39% of his – 35% of his threes have come from the corner.
Now that you say it, the fact that his threes are going to come much easier, whereas McCollum, it's going to be a lot of, like, off-the-dribble, late shot clock. He's going to – I mean, he's still going to have his open threes, but he's been known to
be
savior of an offense.
Otto Porter has yet to make an unassisted three-pointer. They've all been assisted. Probably, I would guess most of them from
John
Wall.
I don't think he's taken a lot of...
probably not. And 82% of CJ McCollum's have been assisted. So most of them, but certainly not all. I think they're both pretty sustainable. Like, I would expect some regression from both, but...
I mean, CJ's the better shooter.
Yeah.
But I think Otto being closer to 40 is more sustainable than CJ being closer to 45, because 45 is really high for that kind of score. You know, he's not like Kyle Korver. He's doing everything.
Yeah. So, you know, I like both of them. I love what Otto Porter is doing right now. I love the way he's playing, and I don't see that much regression coming. You know, maybe his shooting will tick down. Maybe he's a 49% shooter from the field and a 39% shooter from three. That's still hugely valuable.
Yeah, and he's still getting 8 boards and 2 steals, so I think he's just always going to find a way, especially on that team, to do the little things, play defense, be effective.
All right, that's going to do it.
Ooh, I think this is our best show so far, Chris.
It was a good show. We had all kinds of different things going on. We made fun of my pickup basketball acumen.
Made fun of my ability to take it too seriously.
So, yeah, I think it was good.
All right.
Let's do it again. Let's do it again on Sunday.
Let's do it.
For Joe Polito, I'm Chris Towers.
And I'm Chris Towers.
No, you're not.
Oh.
Bye.